Hello and welcome to the Make Ideas Reality Podcast. I'm Justin White, aka the Garage Avenger. In these times of the side hustle and trying to break free of our mundane day jobs, many of us are looking towards turning that hobby into a business. There's a clear distinction between that hobby that makes some money and running an official business. And that's what sometimes can trip us up when we're trying to make a living doing what we love. Today, my guest, Ethan Abramson, an owner and designer of an acclaimed New York furniture company, shares his story and also the insights he's gained interviewing others that have made the jump on his podcast, Building a Furniture Brand. We talk about the right time to jump from a hobby to business, the importance of defining your niche, the neglected aspects of market research, where most fail in pricing and budgeting, and how to actually sell something. Even if you never want to turn your hobby into a business, chances are you know someone that does. This episode could be really beneficial for them. So please have a listen. Ethan shares a lot of knowledge here, and let's get into the show. A business of stuffed animals from China, that didn't work. Let's do something finer. Furniture design that isn't cut price, a philosophy of work hard and be nice. Welcome to the show, Ethan Abramson.
Thank you. Great intro. I appreciate it. I'll cherish that and I'll put it on a pillow and keep it in my living room.
Oh God, they're so bad on it. Welcome to the show, Ethan. Now, I brought you on the show because you are a furniture maker, a designer. You have a podcast where you talk to other furniture makers and designers. And we are going to be talking about turning that hobby into a business. But before we get into that, I thought I'd give you the chance of introducing yourself and give us a little bit of a background of where you came from and how you got to where you are now.
Sure. I'd love to. First, thank you so much for having me on the show. I really do appreciate it. From one podcast host to another, I love what you're doing. And the more people can be talking about other people's businesses and how people got into the trades and everything like that, the better. So I applaud you for what you're doing. And thank you for having me on the show. Now, about me, my name is Ethan. I've had my own furniture company in New York since 2008. I have two sides of the furniture side of my business. One is my own collection of furniture, and I have been doing that for a long time, have had that in a bunch of different furniture shows, design shows. I sell it across the country in stores. It's been in galleries and museums, and that is the collection side of the furniture. The other side is all custom, so anything from bedside tables to full renovations, we can take care of it. And yeah, I've been doing that since 2008 and I have really, really been enjoying it. The other side of my business, and I have a lot of different things going on, a lot of juggling going on, is I am an event host for a bunch of different woodworking and maker and tool events across the country, which I enjoy very much. And I have a little bit of fun on social media as well. So it all rounds out, but at the heart of it is furniture making and design.
Yeah. Well, you have a little fun and your dog, I imagine as well.
It's true. It's true. A lot of fun with that guy.
Yeah. Now we're going to be talking about turning that hobby into a business. And there's a reason why everyone doesn't do this. It's not the easiest thing to do. And the common reasons why hobbies often stay hobbies is that you need to prioritize a full-time job, or maybe you have people that rely on you financially, or just simply can't afford to lose money. You worry about how the hobby would perform as a business, and you tend to overthink things, and that leads to a failure to even start. Or the hobby just won't be fun anymore. This is a big one for me. I don't ever want to lose the joy of creating. And when expectations are put on me and my work by others, it strips the joy for me. So today, Ethan and I will discuss, hopefully, some important aspects of turning that hobby into a business. And we hope to give you the clarity you need to see if the jump is for you or if you've already made the jump. Hopefully, we'll come with some tips to help you build a better business. All right, let's get into the questions. Now, Ethan, you said you've had a successful furniture company since 2008. Was making furniture ever a hobby before you started your business?
It was not a hobby in the way that people usually think about hobbies. It's not something that I did in my off time when I wasn't working somewhere else. It's not something that I developed and thought one day I want to do this. I was always into design and building things and always pretty handy, but I never designed it to be my calling. It was never something that I wanted to jump into. So I worked in a bunch of different places. Like you said in your intro, I think that people maybe were confused about the stuffed animal thing, but you know, I had a little bit of a music career. I worked in advertising for a long time. I worked in commercial interior design for Macy's and Calvin Klein and Sony. I had a stuffed animal company in China for a little bit. I sold Christmas trees in the West Village. I did a lot of things that I thought would make me happy. And I know people can look at the resume and they can say, this guy's kind of flaky. He's just jumping from one job to another. And I'll take that. But on my end, I never grew out of that childhood idea of wanting to do something you like with your day. And that was very, very important to me. And working in advertising, that didn't give me the drive that I wanted to have a fulfilled day. And working in commercial interior design didn't fulfill my day. So I took a hard look at myself and I said, what do you want to do? And what's something that you can control from the beginning to the end? You can start with it in the morning and build something. You don't have to send it overseas. You don't have to send it up a corporate ladder, and you can end with something that you built. And furniture came to mind, and I started working at a shop, and I worked my way up to shop foreman there, jumped to another shop and was a foreman there, and then was doing my own stuff on the side and until it became a profitable business, and then made the jump into doing it full time. So hobby, no, but always in the back of my mind that I enjoyed building things.
It's interesting that you called yourself flaky, because it makes
I said other people might think I'm flaky. I think that it is just following my passion and following something that I want to do in my life, because we all have, you know, if we're lucky, it's a long life, but we only have a certain amount of days that we can do things in and live. And why not spend those days doing something you enjoy rather than doing something you don't?
Damn straight. Well, what I was really going to say was that I think it's a good thing that, you know, you tried a lot of different stuff before you got into it, because often you don't know what you like doing until you try a whole heap of stuff. I feel like some people invest their whole entire life into the wrong direction, you know, and they're always miserable. So I think my hat's off to you for trying a whole heap of different stuff before you actually found the thing that you really wanted to do. And go full in for your own business in furniture making of all things, which is, you know, highly competitive and also backbreaking work. Like I worked as a furniture maker for 1 or 2 years there, and geez, you know, lifting those huge cabinets into places and the custom work. I mean, and you didn't get paid well. It's you have to really love it. That's for sure.
Yeah, I think that this might be jumping ahead into your questions, but I just want to just play on that for a second, that everybody, you know, 99% of the people get into furniture making like I did, thinking this is amazing. This is design. This is building. This is getting to create something with your hands. And how could that not be exciting? And if you do it for long enough, and if you're successful and you need to scale, then it's not a lot of fun all the time. It's hard. And it's all those things that you say, it's backbreaking work, and it's dealing with clients, and it becomes a business. But as long as you still have that gleam of hope in your eye, then you can push through and enjoy it. So,
well, I mean, it's ultimately up to you how big you want to build your business, right? Depending on how much money you want in your pocket. So, I mean, if it's not fun having a massive business, then you ultimately have the choice to turn it down, I guess, and keep your business small. And I'm sure there's many people around that have done that. You know, they don't need to build the next IKEA or, you know, anything like that. So yeah, I fully understand that. Now, you've got a podcast. It's called Building a Furniture Brand. I mean, it's a pretty clear title, what the podcast is about. And in your podcast, you talk with people who, you know, successfully run furniture businesses and woodworking businesses. I have a question. Have you found any quantitative data from your guests? When is the right time to jump from that hobby to a business?
Now, the great thing about my podcast and the reason I did it was because a lot of people are always asking me, as somebody who's been in the furniture business for a long time and who's also on social media and accessible, and people like to talk to me about business. So they were always asking me what my advice was. And I say my advice might not necessarily work for other people. So everybody goes about it in a different way. And that's why I want to have this show, where I talk to people from all different walks of life, all different situations, all different places, and how they built their business. So going back to your question, I've talked to a lot of people about this, and people have jumped in at all different times. Some people right out of school, some people later in life, and every different thing in between, every different timeline in between, people have started this. But so the time when people jump in isn't always the same. And I don't really have any data to say, this is the time to make the jump at, you know, 7:15 on a Thursday, everybody who wants to be a furniture maker, start now. But what is the same with a majority of people who do start their furniture business is a belief in themselves. Maybe not necessarily a belief in their skills or as a furniture maker, or their skills in business, or their you know, construction skills, but there's a belief in oneself. And I think that this is true in furniture making and entrepreneurship in general, that they can do it themselves, that they can make that jump, and they can live or die in business by the decisions that they make. So timing wise, it can vary depending on your situation, but you need to be able to believe in yourself, as cheesy as that sounds, because when you are the person who is in charge, you need to be able to tell yourself it's going to be okay.
Yeah, because it's interesting, because you have to, that belief in yourself is so important. A couple of episodes back, we talked with Mark Justin, and, you know, he was suffering from massive anxiety attacks and working IT, and then decided, like, he's going to pretend that his woodworking hobby is a business. And he said something to me. He said, I can't have it fail when I'm working this hard. And he's like, so he had this belief that he was working so hard, it was never going to fail. Mm-hmm. It was always going to be successful. And, you know, he's making it work, and he's still only, what, 3 years in or something like that, and he's still making it work. And I think that's super interesting to hear, that the belief is the most important thing from most people that have made the jump.
Yeah. And it does sound like I'm just throwing out a line, like a, you know, a slogan from a locker room poster, where it's like, believe in yourself and you can succeed. And I understand it sounds silly, but you really need to do that in whatever shape or form that takes in your own mind to be able to push through the hard times?
Well, it's a little bit about those three sort of things that I mentioned in the topic intro, is like, the fact you worry about if the hobby will, perform as a business. You overthink everything, and, it leads you to not even starting the business. Or like, you're worried about it not being fun anymore, or, things like that. Having that belief in yourself that you can make it work just negates all those excuses that you often have. For example, I think that's probably what makes it very clear, is like when people have gotten rid of all those fears, they just jump.
Yeah, because it's not always going to be fun, and it's not going to always be exciting, and it's going to be a grind sometimes. Mm. So
now you're a furniture designer and maker, but IKEA, which we mentioned earlier, is also, a furniture maker and designer, and you clearly can't compete with the giant Swedish juggernaut. How can a hobbyist carve their own niche in this overcrowded market of furniture making and woodworking in general?
Now, taking a step back, because everybody always says IKEA as like the boogeyman in the furniture industry, like, oh, IKEA's coming for you, but I actually, on the furniture side of IKEA, the business side and the policies, we're not going to get into that, but the actual furniture and design side, I actually really like IKEA. I feel like IKEA is the gateway furniture for people who are going to start buying higher end furniture, because nobody starts out thinking, I really want a expensive chair and make this room into something that could be in a magazine. People just get what they can afford. And if there wasn't something like IKEA, where there was all the different designs and you can really figure out what you want and customize it based on their catalog and their collection, then people wouldn't take that second step to say, I really like this, but this is cheap furniture. What is the next stop? What is custom furniture? And so I think that IKEA is a very good gateway furniture position into what we all do as custom furniture makers or high-end furniture makers.
So the question, I guess, though, is, how do you stand out from, the crowd? I guess it's really, there's a lot of players in this market of especially furniture. Do you have any advice on how hobbyists can look at and perceive a new niche or something like that?
Yeah, of course. Now, you are correct. It is hard to stand out in this, and I'm not going to sugarcoat it and say that everybody makes special furniture and everybody's going to have a place on the shelf, and then that's just not true. And I've felt the pain of that, and other people I know have felt the pain of that, and anyone who's put furniture out has felt that pain. What you need to do to fight that and to become successful or to come out on top or to even give yourself a fighting chance in this business is to, number one, look at your market and understand your market and understand what you can bring to that market so it's not overly saturated. And number two, which sometimes doesn't match up with number one, make furniture that you enjoy making, because then you can actually stand behind that furniture. And the two don't always mix. They don't always mix properly, because sometimes building furniture for a market could be furniture that you hate. And that's one way to go, but that's a way to be successful. And the other way is build furniture that you love and find a market that supports that. And hopefully they can go together, but they don't always have to. And everybody has to remember that when you're building furniture and you are your own person, that story is just as important as how the furniture looks. And there can be furniture that might not be for somebody, but once they hear your story and once they hear the background and what's behind it, they can start to come around. So differentiate yourself by being yourself, but at the same time, keep the business part in mind.
It's interesting that you are the most important asset in your business. You know, like putting yourself in the work is really what makes you stand out. I can't think of anyone that really has been successful that hasn't done that. It seems like it's the most important thing to do.
Because that's when you're starting out, because you need to make a name for yourself. You need to carve out a handhold to get to the next level and the next level and the next level. And once you're on the plateau and the mountaintop and people know you, you can remove yourself a little bit from the furniture. You don't need to say, this is my story in every single one. You can sometimes remove yourself because you have built up that audience. But to stand apart in the beginning, you really need to put yourself into the pieces just as much as the work you're putting into the pieces.
Yeah, I mean, we talked a little bit about this too, like the understanding your market and where your style or your, you know, niche fits in. When you're doing market research, it seems to be a really important part of, you know, before you launch your business. And it seems to be not a very small task. It's quite a mammoth task. And it seems to also destroy businesses if you don't do it properly. What do you think hobbyists often neglect when they're researching their market and then competition before they jump in?
I think that people forget nowadays that it's a global world. It's a big world. And maybe people can look at their business in a very micro lens and can be searching for something locally, or they can be searching for something in just the furniture that they see scrolling through their social, but they forget that there is a big world out there, and there's with the proper research, you can find a niche for what you're doing. So I think that people for market research, people forget to look big picture before they look small picture. Look big picture, figure out where the chunk that you want to be sitting in is, and then zoom into that and figure out where you fit into that niche.
Any advice or understanding of where you can find all this, you know, information? Like, for example, if you are only getting into like unique chairs, for example, that's your niche. Like, how do you find your competition? How do you go online and search worldwide, you know, how your little niche fits into the bigger niche, I guess you'd say?
I think everybody, or maybe not everybody, but I think a lot of people who want to get into this, who have the design aspect that has been nagging in the back of their mind, has over the years, it used to be ripped out pages from a magazine. Now it's saved stuff on social media and saying, this really is what I want to do. I like this. This is interesting for me. And that's a good place to start, because people that you want to emulate are going to be your competition. So you look into those companies, you figure out information about those companies, and you can even reach out to them. Some people enjoy a little competition. Some people don't even view it as competition, because they view that even though it is a competitive marketplace, there is still room to have more people in there, because everybody has a different place that they fit. So reaching out to companies that you wish you could be, or learning about companies that you wish you could be, is a great way to start doing market research.
Let's talk about the numbers, because let's be honest, you can't have a successful business without making money. Budgeting and pricing seems to be a pretty straightforward thing, but it seems to trip most hobbyists up when starting a business. What do most of us forget to do when, you know, budgeting for jobs and you know, thinking about how to sell products?
You know, this would turn into a 4 to 6 hour long interview if I listed off everything that people forget to include in their pricing. But it comes with experience. You can't and you shouldn't and you won't get your pricing right from the very first job, because there's things you don't think about. There's everything in the shop that you think, okay, glue, okay, machines, okay, new blades, okay, brushes, okay, paint, okay, all that stuff. We're adding that in. And then you forget your turn the lights on costs, where what is your electricity for a day cost? What is your water cost? What is your rent cost? And then when you're adding that in, you forget that sometimes suppliers are out of stock and you need to find something somewhere else. And that's a drive. And you didn't count that drive into your pricing. And when you're delivering, somebody's not home and you have to come back another day. And that's a whole day you lost. And there's always things that are going to be added to your pricing. So it's different for everybody. And it's different with people who are doing collections of furniture versus custom stuff. But I think that it comes down to experience and running your business and learning where your pitfalls are and adding that in as it comes. Because like I said in the beginning, you're not going to hit it right on the first time. You need to learn how you work, because some people are really, really messy, and it takes them 10 minutes to find a tool and that can be added into your cost, because you know you're going to build this out for, it's going to take 40 hours, but really it's going to take 50 because you can't find anything.
Yeah, that's the story of my life. I can't find anything. I live where I can relate, because I, you know, when I worked as a furniture maker, you know, I had some experience, and you know, the customers for our clients we service, they often would sort of be a little bit outraged at the hourly price that we would have. But once you start breaking it down for them, they kind of started to understand a little bit, you know, like, so we had an hourly price, I think it was about 750 kroners an hour plus tax. So that's about, yeah, give or take $75 an hour plus tax. And, you know, that's quite expensive. You know, for example, a normal carpenter, you know, you probably get for about 500 instead. So, you know, we added the cost, but of course a normal carpenter doesn't generally have a workshop. They're trying to keep warm in winter. You know, they don't have all the expensive tools and machines and saws and, you know, employees, spray booths and all that other extra costs that come into a job. And it was a bit of awakening for me. I always thought when we quoted these jobs that we were quoting way too high. But then once I realized how much stuff goes on in the background, you know, the fact that we would have to spend half a day packing the truck with all the stuff before delivery, you know, two people, half a day, literally just putting things on the back of a truck. You know, that's a lot of hours and a lot of money wasted if you don't put that in the budget.
Something you just said really jumped out at me, that you thought you thought that you all were pricing too high. And that is the balance between the furniture maker and the client, because furniture makers know how to build stuff and they are good at it because that's why they're in business. And because you know how to do something and it comes easy, or you've practiced it enough that you can do it, you automatically lower the value of that in your mind. And you think, if I can do it, other people can do it. So you bring your price lower because mentally you're thinking everybody can do this. And then the customer hears your price and they're looking at it and they're thinking, I want this to be lower because I always want to save money when I'm buying things. So there's just this devaluing going on both sides that you need to, as a business owner, you need to be able to get a hold of, and you need to say, no, this is the numbers by the actual numbers. It's not a emotional value. It's not a, oh, I feel like I'm worth this today and I feel like I'm worth this tomorrow. It's a pure numbers game when it comes down to it, that you need to know what you need to make from each project to stay in business, because it is a business. You're not doing it as a hobby when you run a furniture business, and you need to know that. Now, not saying that once you have all those numbers down, you can't say, I really want to do this project. I'll lower the numbers here because I know I can get it here. That is up to you. That's how you run your own business. But you need to have a solid foundation of what those numbers are so you can stay in business.
What do you think about the mentality? I always feel that, you know, often when a lot of people see that I'm quite creative and quite good with my hands, so they'll come to me with, you know, projects and jobs that they want me to do. And often I sort of give them actually a really cheap price, but they're kind of like outraged at the price that I was asking for. And I have this feeling that it's got something to do with how cheap we get everything, like the mass produced these days, and the understanding or lack of understanding of what it takes to build something by hand. Have you had any experience like that where people just don't comprehend what it takes to build something?
There is definitely, in today's society, there is definitely a disconnect between somebody buying something and it showing up and them using it, because we all sit behind a computer, and when we need something, we click buy now and it shows up in 2 days. And that is how our minds have been conditioned to react to buying things. Everything has to be now and it has to be cheap, because we can see all the different prices and we can pick, this is the cheapest one, this is the fastest one, let's do that. And there is furniture that you can purchase like that. And if there's people who are outraged at the price or outraged at the lead time, then maybe they're not your customer, and maybe they're going to be harder to deal with and take more of your time than is worth it. And you could actually end up losing money on that project. So I think that if people come to you and they want to buy something from you, then you should make sure that they are an educated customer, and educated in, I don't want to say you have to get them a library card and give them a list of books that they need to take out, but educated. And I don't even think that you need to educate them necessarily about your pricing or your hourly wage or anything like that. You could, and that has helped people. I know people who do that, who bullet point out every single thing. But what I'm saying is an educated customer about who you are, about your business, about why your business is different than a buy now business, why your business has a 6 week lead time for a desk when you could buy a desk for half the price in 2 days on your computer. So you need to educate them as to your business and why they should be buying it from you.
Yeah, I love that. I think it's so valuable. I think understanding that they most probably, if they don't understand why you're so expensive, that they're not your market, and to not spend your time trying to please them, you know, because you use so much energy and time and therefore money, you know, trying to convince them to buy something. And, you know, in the end, they're probably going to be worth nothing for you. So I think that was great advice.
And that, again, all of this, everything that I'm saying comes with experience and comes with learning how your business works. And don't expect, if you're jumping in and your first day of working for yourself is Thursday and it's, you know, Wednesday right now, and tomorrow you think, all right, I have all this information. I have my game plan. I'm going to get it right the first time. You're not. You're going to have bad customers. You're going to lose money on jobs. You're going to chase after customers that turn out to not be great customers for you. And it's just a learning experience that you need to put in the time. You need to put in the repetition before you learn how your business works.
Talking about customers, like, most of us are creative souls. We love the physical work of making something, and people like us generally are pretty hopeless at marketing and sales, but we have to run a business. So do you have any advice on how to market and make sales if you're a one-man show?
I get this question all the time, and I have a pretty buttoned up answer for it, because I give talks. I talk with classes. I talk to people in art school. I talk to big crowds of people asking what class should I take? What should I do to be successful? And I say, like you said, people who want to start furniture businesses are artistic souls. There's not a lot of people who think, I'm going to make all my money in, you know, all my friends are going into the stock market, I'm going to take all my money and put it into furniture making, because that seems like it's just going to rocket to the top. So what you need to do, you can learn how building furniture works, but you can't learn how the business works. So you should go to business school. You should take business classes. You should read business books. And that's the same with marketing. You should learn about the business of marketing. You should learn how to get yourself out there, because there's a lot of great, amazing, fantastic, any adjective you want to use, furniture makers that will never have their own business because they don't want to market themselves. They don't want to put themselves out there like that. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with being somebody who likes to be in the shop, who likes to build stuff for themselves, or who likes to build stuff for clients, but they don't want to be the forward-facing part of a company. And the amazing craftsmen, they just don't want to be that forward-facing part of the company. So first you need to ask yourself, what type of furniture maker are you? Are you somebody who wants to build behind the scenes, or are you somebody who wants to sell and wants to market yourself? And then once you decide that, if you decide, yes, you want to be the forward-facing part, then you need to get your story down. You need to figure out who you are and how you can impart that to a customer. Like we were saying before, you need to look at the companies that you think are succeeding and see what in them is succeeding, what in them you feel like stands out, and try to do that for yourself.
Yeah, I remember you saying on one of your podcasts about, you know, just the way you make your, I guess, your pitches towards like designers and things like that. And I was like, oh, I can't believe I didn't really think about that as like an option for selling stuff. You know, of course you're making very expensive furniture. Designers often, you know, design spaces for clients with a lot of money. So, you know, but you know, unless you hear that sort of stuff, you don't really get an understanding of like, oh yeah, that's an option. That's how I can also sell things. But of course, then you have to wine and dine and get in with those designers to get them to fall in love with your story, so that then they can also pass that on to their clients. And then, you know, hopefully you'll make some sales. So it's not an easy thing. You know, you have to leave the workshop at some point to do that.
Yeah. Fall in love with your story. Or like I said, there's two ways: fall in love with your pricing, because there's not necessarily one correct way. And yes, happiness plays into the business and being happy plays into the business. But sometimes you need to remember that it's a business, and designers like a good price. And if you can figure out how to build it for that price, go for it. And if you can figure out how to get them to love your story and want to sell that as well, that's, you know, a double threat.
Learning from people who went through the nitty-gritty of starting a business, it can be pretty invaluable, especially those who have done exactly what you want to do. You kind of mentioned that earlier by, you know, trying to see what the your competitors have done and see what they how they got to where they are and sort of copy it, I guess, in some ways. These people can help you, you know, guide your business and avoid some of the pitfalls you could possibly fall down. I wondered, since you have had all these people, you know, on your podcast, and then, of course, I also wondered if you had any mentors that you personally had, you know, what are the biggest things you've learned from your podcast guests and for any mentors?
From the podcast and from talking with people, I've learned an incalculable amount of information. And that's not to say that I'm necessarily going to use it for, and I know that sounds like a throwaway thing where it's like, what did you learn? And I'm like, I learned too much. Next question. But really, I learned so much about how other people are running their businesses. And I might not run my business that way, but it again goes back to the zooming out and looking at the industry as a larger thing, as a macro thing, to learn where you can fit in it. And I think that the idea of mentors and the idea of learning from people and learning from your peers in this community is so incredibly important, because as furniture makers, it is an incredibly solitary profession when you're starting out. A lot of businesses that you see now that have, you know, 10, 20, 30 employees, they didn't start out like that. They started out with 3, 2, 1 individual shops, and you can lose sight of the fact that there's a bigger world out there, and you don't always have to reinvent the wheel by yourself, because there's people out there who have been down the same road. And so reaching out to a mentor, instead of just bashing your head against the same wall over and over and over again till you figure out how to break it down, just take a step back and ask somebody. And that is, it's going to just open up your eyes. You don't have to do it yourself. And even though it feels like you're the only one who's doing this and nobody would understand your story, there's going to be somebody out there who has gone through something similar to this, that even if they can't give you the best advice, they can just show you that you're not alone in this journey that you're taking as a furniture maker.
Yeah. Has there been any specific things that you could remember that you've learned from a mentor, or more importantly, your guests on your podcast, that you've actually applied into your own business or lifestyle?
I'm pretty much, I've been doing this for a long time, and I'm pretty set in my ways. But I think, one, hearing from all these people and remembering that, because I forget it sometimes. I forget that you can get very, very blinders on and just looking in the one direction, talking with all these people. I remember that everybody's going through these struggles. There's whether it's at your level or below you or above you, there's struggles all over. So just remember that you're fighting something that you're not the only one doing that. For marketing, for pricing, there's been a couple good things that I've picked up along the way. And just to, I think with contracts too, and I have a pretty good contract in place, but I've learned talking with some people about how they set up their contracts that definitely was an eye-opening experience for me.
Hmm. Yeah, so I imagine they do something different and you're like, oh, that's so much easier. Oh, I forgot that, you know. And that essentially helps you make more money or have less stress around, you know, running your business, I guess. Yeah.
And I think it's great just to be around same-minded people to be able to have that conversation, because I don't know about you, but I don't go to a lot of furniture dinner parties. I don't go to a lot of things like that. Yes, there are design week and there's shows and events and things like that, but day to day, it is a profession that is a little bit outside the norm. You can't do the office conversation. Oh, somebody left something in the microwave. I don't know what people talk about in offices anymore, but it's good to have like-minded people to be able to talk about what you do and to not lose sight of your profession by just thinking about it in your own head.
We've talked a lot about money and marketing and things like that and profitability and, you know, the bottom line. And of course, that's super duper important. But how important is it for you that you maintain a focus on the joy and the happiness over the profitability of your company?
Me as a person or me as in the royal me? I know that's not a thing, but, you know.
What's the royal you?
Everybody in general.
I mean specifically you, Ethan. Let's start with that.
I don't know how much happiness, if I'm going to be honest, I don't know how much happiness plays into how I run my business. Because yes, when I started it from a happy place. I started from a place that I wanted to do this, that I enjoyed it. But as it becomes a business, you realize that it is a business and you sometimes have to remove yourself from the equation. You have to remove your emotions from the equation. And that's not saying it's a cold-hearted business and you have to be a robot and you have to check your feelings at the door every time you come in. But sometimes you can't rely on, as terrible as it sounds, sometimes you can't rely on your own happiness to make a profitable business. And you have to take what clients say and you have to take it not personally. And you have to take losing jobs and you have to take it not personally. And you have to understand that it's not you, especially people out there who are single people shops or single people businesses. You have to remember that it's not you, it's your business. And so maybe you're not personally happy that day, but your business is succeeding and you can be happy off the clock when you have the money that you made and can do things that you want. You have to remember that one, it is a business and it's not you as a person. And two, that you need to have boundaries in that business to remember that there can be happiness outside of furniture making and you can do things outside of furniture making.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, man, because, you know, we tie ourselves to our jobs, regardless of whether we own our own business or not. And sometimes we just need to like decouple, you know, remove ourselves from that position and see that, you know, it's just a job or it's just the business, you know. I really, really like that. Before we get into the Rapid Fire Five, I wanted to take this chance to thank all my patrons. Your support is not taken for granted, for sure. I wanted to thank especially my top tier heroes, Steen Serhus, Sylvester Arneson, Andreas Vollman, and Ryan Wilson. And a big thank you to Simon Knightley, an OG patron, He's been there right from the beginning. What an absolute legend. Thank you. Now, I don't like asking on this podcast, but I thought it's time. I need to ask you guys. There's a dozen of you guys out there supporting this show. And, you know, I want to produce more episodes. I want it to provide more value for you guys. So if you look forward to every episode, please head over to patreon.com, become a part of the GA Nation. There's a link in the show notes, or just search for Garage Avenger on patreon.com. And, you know, if it's okay, you know, if you can't support the show, I just want to say thank you for listening anyway. It means the absolute world to me and, of course, my guests. Now that I've finished groveling to you guys.
Before you do that, I want to also thank all the people who are supporting you, all the people who are supporting you monetarily and also supporting you by listening, because this is supporting the arts. This is supporting getting the word out there for people. And I know personally, it's not an easy thing to do to talk to people and make a show and put it out there. So I also want to thank you and the people supporting you, because it's a big deal. We forget, because media and content is so easily digestible. We forget that sometimes there is people behind all the content that we are consuming. And they're people just like us who are trying to do this to make other people's lives better. And supporting that is a big deal. So thank you to people who support you as well from me.
Thanks, Ethan. Like, you know, I definitely feel like I'm one of those people sometimes when on the other end, you know, of listening to a podcast someone else does, or, you know, consuming content from someone I really enjoy and I don't financially support them. You know, I definitely feel the other end of that. But, you know, since starting this podcast, I've really decided, like, I really need to make an effort to, you know, be that person that supports those that are doing an amazing job. And I really, really appreciate everyone that does so for me. And that's just encouraged me to get out there and support others also that do an amazing job. So thanks, Ethan. I really appreciate that, mate.
People helping people.
Love it. Now, like I said, now that we've finished groveling, let's get on with the rapid fire five. You ready?
I feel like we should do some laser sound effects.
I used to have a whole like intro for this. I used to have it as like, it was like a train noise coming in, like the old Western thing, and the bow, 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 bow. But I got rid of that a while back. But maybe
the budget cuts around there. That's why people need to donate, so we can get the old train and Western gunfight back. There we go. That's it.
Maybe I should bring it back.
Hey, what are you looking at? Get up and dance. This is the Rapid 5-5.
All right, let's get on with the first question. What's something people get wrong about you?
I'm sure people get a lot of things wrong about me, because in today's world, when you're just seeing other people through your phone, through your computer screen, you're just listening to their voice, you don't necessarily know that person. And when you don't have that connection. And I definitely feel like people can make their own opinions about people when they're just looking at them through the lens of social media. So I think that I can't name all the things that I'm sure people get wrong about me, but I think that the big thing is that just because I've been lucky enough to get some small notoriety on social media, or I've worked myself to the bone for years to get some small notoriety in furniture or event hosting and stuff like that, doesn't mean that I don't like to talk with everybody. I set an hour aside of my own time that no billing, not for any type of profit, to answer all the emails I get, to answer all the DMs I get, to help people with their business, to help people with their social media, to just say hi to people who like looking at my dog. You know, I like to make sure that people know that I'm the person behind the accounts, the social stuff that you see, is somebody who just really likes to connect with people and really likes to enjoy that. So always feel free to reach out, and I always do my best to respond to every message and every email and every question that I get.
All right. What's something you like?
That wasn't rapid. Sorry. That wasn't rapid. I'll go quicker.
Trust me, Ethan, you are not the slowest to answer these questions. What's something you like doing that has nothing to do with making?
My day is pretty consumed with making things. And if it's not directly physically making things, it is the business of making things. It is the business of running a company. So I think recently, and without giving myself a plug here, I think that what I've really been enjoying is doing this podcast that I've been working on. And I really enjoy it because it's still in the same vein of what I do, but it gives me that opportunity, like we talked about a couple questions ago, to talk shop, to talk business, to talk with other furniture makers about what we do on a daily basis. And it's been really rewarding for me, looking at the back end numbers and seeing that, you know, tens of thousands of people are listening to these episodes, and that feels really good to me, and feels really good to be able to help the community out, and to be able to share what I've learned, and to be able to give a platform for what other people have learned as well to help people out.
So you're essentially still making a podcast though, aren't you?
talking about making a podcast while on a, well, okay. So making things, well, I think, so something that I don't, I guess sleeping. I really enjoy sleeping. It is something that I feel like I don't get enough of, and I don't make anything while I'm doing it. And I never dream about furniture, and I'm happy to sleep. So that'll be my answer. Erase the other one, rewind it, sleeping.
Roger, sleeping.
Second by eating.
What's a project that is completely priceless that you could never sell?
I don't know. I think that these are really turning into, like, instead of rapid fire, they're turning into like medium speed answered questions. So I don't think, I don't know. I don't really have a good answer for that, because as somebody who makes things for a living, I think that I don't have that same investment that I used to have in building things. Maybe the first chair I ever made that I still have in the shop, but when it turns into a business, sometimes you lose your attachment to things. And that's not saying that there's not things that I've been given, or presents, or things in my life that I would never sell, because there definitely is that. But furniture wise, I can't think of anything at off the top of my head.
All right. What does happiness look like?
Happiness for you would look like me answering these questions a lot faster, but happiness for me is success. And that is a genuine, honest answer, and success in many different forms, not just business success, but feeling successful at the end of the day, feeling like I've taken everything I can out of something and enjoyed it to the fullest, and being successful in whatever way that presents itself that day.
Awesome. Who should be the next guest on this podcast?
I don't know. I'd probably say everybody who I had on my podcast would be great on your podcast. Let's just keep the love going and keep sharing people in this community and keep uplifting people who are doing great things. And there's a full scroll of people's names that I can put in a tube and mail to you. But, you know, basically just supporting people who are doing things is just so important. So that's my short and long answer.
That's not a good answer. I need a name, Ethan. Come on, lay it down. I need a name.
I don't know, man. I don't know. I'm a people pleaser. So I don't want to say one name and then realize a minute later that I forgot and have to call you back up and edit it back in.
All right. Well, it'll be in the after show there, guys. All right. I'll get it out of Ethan in the after show. Thank you, Ethan, for coming on the show. It's been an absolute pleasure. I was wondering where people can find you.
People can find me. The best place is probably on my social media, on Instagram and all the other great things at The Build with Ethan. It's The Build with Ethan. And I really like to showcase the lighter side of furniture making on there. If people want to know more about the professional side, then it's Building a Furniture Brand with Ethan Abramson or buildingafurniturebrand.com, and they can check out the podcast. And it has actually truly also been a pleasure speaking with you. And I have enjoyed it a tremendous amount, and I hope to do this again sometime.
I love it. So I hope that everyone has gotten some value from this episode. Starting a business is hard work, and turning a hobby into a business can be fraught with danger, and it's not for everybody. But if you are looking to make the jump, I hope this podcast has helped. And if you've already made the jump, I hope you got something to help your business. If you enjoyed the show or you thought it was crap, I encourage you to give me some feedback. You can do so by sending me a DM to @GarageAvenger on Instagram. I also encourage you to share this with your friends and family if you got something from it. Remember to ignite your creativity and make your ideas a reality. I'm Justin White. Thanks for listening. Until next time, keep pushing yourself, keep ballsing up things, keep learning, get inspired, and I'll catch you on the flip side. That's it. We're out.
Yeah, there we go.